Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the European Experience Organization's Experience the Different podcast with me, Christopher Brooks, your host. In this series, we catch up with incredible individuals who've made real progress in the customer experience discipline, having been practicing as consultants on the vendor side or as clients for probably 10 to 15 years, each of them. Today's guest was great fun to catch up with, someone who I've admired for a long time and was very much looking forward to, and that is Nicolette Waring. Nicolette explained to us just how important the environment is that people work in order to get great connection with customer experience. She spoke about the importance of human connections and not formalizing things too much. In fact, just from those two comments, you can probably appreciate a common thread in the way that Nicolette thinks. She has also experienced many organizations across the globe and has recognized that leadership and mindset are really important to make a difference. So before I reveal any more of the gold that Nicolette shares with us, I'll keep quiet and move to the podcast. Hi, Nicolette. How are you doing?
Hi, Christopher. I'm good. Thank you.
Really glad to have you on board. You've recently taken up the role of ambassador of the Netherlands for the ECXO. It's just perfect timing to catch up with you and get your perspective on the world of customer experience. Now, I think you've been practicing for quite some time in the sector, but like all the best practitioners, you've got your head down, you're making a change to the organizations that you're working in or working with. Some people may not know too much about you. So would you mind just giving us an appreciation of where you've come from? And we can go back to the first book. Let's remind people, in case they forget about the first book, understand where you've come from and where you are now in the world of customer experience.
Okay, thank you, Christopher. I guess I've been in the world of customer experience since I was a student, because I started as a flight attendant to work my way through university. And in my work life, I pretty quickly ended up in the customer service environment. So I very much come to customer experience from an operations background and not from a marketing background. And I guess before customer experience became sexy, I already was very deep into it. And I think that was also part of, I built my career in the commercializing cable industry on the continent. So it used to be utility based, and then the Americans came and started to buy all these companies and started to launch internet through cable, telephony through cable, pay-per-view, pay TV, whatchamahave. And it was all about the value per connection and per home connected. So that was very much the game. And in the earlier days of this century, I realized that this game had an end date and that the times were coming for companies like this, that the competition was going to be so hyper that they really needed to start to treat customers, but with that also the people who serve their customers. So the people in the front line started to treat them differently. But we were still very much in an American setting, very much shareholder value driven. Not really the kind of story that gets you promoted, which I didn't care about, but I cared about other things, but I had to be clever in the way I played it. So I guess my CX path until today has been one of being a maverick, being a change agent, living by the motto of sometimes it's better to ask for an apology than for permission up front. I had one of my bosses once called me his wizard apprentice, and he said, Nicolette, for the life of me, I have no clue how you do it, but keep on doing it. So it's, and yeah, I'm still passionate about it. And why is that? Because the fact that I actually have the opportunity to be a guide for people in organizations to create an environment that they love to work in and that customers love to do business with, that to me is really key. And I think that is also one of the things that we have to be careful about with customer experience. Things like customer journey mapping and things like that. You can try to sort of formalize everything, but at the end of the day, it's the human connection that makes the difference. So whatever you do, at the end of the day, make sure that what Barry Schwartz calls people use their practical wisdom and are enabled to bring in their practical wisdom, their moral will, and their moral skill when interacting with the customer, because that is what makes real moments of truth. And that is where you make a real impact.
I couldn't agree. Couldn't agree. I'm very happy working on projects where we don't see a journey map because actually it's about getting that connection with the people. So I completely understand where you're coming from there. And I see you describe yourself as a guide. It's a really interesting way of putting it. Do you see yourself, and apologies if it's the wrong reference, but holding hands with the people you're advising and helping them? Do you want them to lead and you support? What's the dynamic? How does it work?
Customer experience and customer centricity is not something you can implement. The reason why I call myself a guide is because I don't believe in the concept where you bring in a lot of consultants to do it for you. So I wouldn't say I take them by the hand. I would say I inspire them. I ask questions, critical questions. I challenge them in all kinds of ways and on all kinds of aspects. So that can be about their IT environment or their operational efficiency and processes, things like that. But it can also be about leadership, about consistency. Do you walk the talk? What is the example that you set as a leader? Because at the end of the day, it can only be successful if people at the top, if the tone of voice or the tone at the top is consistent with what is said. A lot of companies have a beautiful mission, vision, and values, but A, the leadership doesn't really set the right example that actually is consistent with them. And B, it's for the people in the front line, people in the trenches of the organization. It's something they came up with. And as soon as there's a they and we, then you're already in the wrong part of where you don't want to be. So people have not internalized it. And what's more, it doesn't drive their behavior. It's not like they balance off everything that they do and say to what is our shared ambition, because they don't feel that shared ambition. Very often I come into organizations where people just say, you know what, I'll just follow my job description. And I'm here from 9 to 5 and it pays the bills. That we all know is lethal for customer experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned there about the importance of the leaders, and there's an expression that I very much, and it's one that Jeannie Waters uses as well, which is around enlightened leaders. In your time, have you found that when you meet a leader, you can sense straight away whether they get this is about what they can contribute and how they can create better outcomes, or they're looking at this in terms of what they can get out of it? Can you see it binary like that over the years in terms of, or are there individuals that you see, they don't get it, but I think I can get them there to get it?
That's a good question. To be quite honest, I wouldn't work for a leader who's just in it for his personal ego and his personal bonuses, because I don't believe in that concept. A person who is, there's no good or wrong, right or wrong here, but it's just a different focus. And a person with that kind of a focus will never be able to be the inspiring leader who creates a safe and brave space for the employees in his company. It's a very different kind of culture. Enlightened leaders, that's a big word. I think that one of the things that I really think are interesting is that over the last 10 years, I have seen a very different approach to leadership. And I think it's also with young people. We know that all the research shows that they no longer. And if you look at the top 10 of most aspired companies to work for, it's not the companies are not there that used to be there. the big brand names, the Shells and what you have in this world, or Unilever. It's companies that actually have a vision on the environment, on sustainability, but also on diversity, on inclusion, and things like that. And very important, what they are looking for in a job is to grow their character, not to grow their wallet or their career, but to grow as a human being. And I think that is in this whole digitalizing world. I just read an article this morning in the financial press where ChatGPT is going to be very threatening for knowledge workers. And it's, when I look back over the last 20 years, where 20 years ago, people were not digital savvy. And look at us today. We have our everything in our phone. We do everything on our phone. We live with our phone. So we are very digital savvy. And interestingly enough, with that development, the human connection is becoming more and more important. And that is both for to attract people and to build your employer brand, and also on the customer side. So if I look at what you called enlightened leaders, then I think it's much more, and that those are the kind of people that I really love to work with. The people are that are looking for, okay, how can I, on the one hand, create this valuable environment that is valuable for my employees and for my customers? But hey, we're in business to make money. So how do I do that part well as well? So how do I create this balance between the value that my employees and my customers feel and what my shareholders feel in their wallet? And I think that is, and yeah, granted, because of the way that I built my career, where I always had to also deal with those shareholders with very high demands, that's really where I have a lot of experience. How do you do that? And how do you create an environment that is and fun to work in, that people love to work in, that customers love to do business with? And actually, there is also a big part of the return on investment for shareholders. And apart from that, you can, and make the most beautiful customer journey maps and do all kinds of things that on an intellectual level, you think you create the ideal customer experience. You need people to be able to deliver upon that promise, but you also need what I call the brilliant basics. Because if your basics aren't in order, then fix that first.
Absolutely.
Because
Which it brings me on to something you said earlier, which has just triggered something in my mind here around how you go about it. Because we've been talking about customer experience being seen as a new panacea, but as you said, it's been around for many years. And you have CEOs who come in, and it may not just be the CEO, it might also be a new team that's brought in. And they jump in and say, "Don't worry, we're here to save the day. Everything's going to be all right. You've been going for 30, 40 years, 50, 100 years, but we're here to save the day." And then it's a big bang and they expect change. Now, you've been working with organizations like we have for many years. How would you say, what is the right approach? Is that the right approach? A big flares up, the fireworks behind the Disney castle, and it's all going to be good now? Or is the reality very different?
You're asking an operations person, so the reality is very different, I can tell you. And I most of my career I worked in B2C environments and sometimes responsible for thousands of customer service employees. And guess what they feel when a small team comes in and says, "Yes, we're going to make the world perfect," and then toss it over the wall. Very often, these are people who, they feel task executors. They might be, but their engagement is not really at a high level. Some of them may be switched off. And at the end of the day, it's like a marketing campaign. I've had the situations where the CMO said yes, and we have a new positioning for our brand and a new mission and vision and values. And I've got all this great material, and we're going to put it in your contact centers. Okay. And what do you think this is going to do with the people? They get even more disconnected. It's becoming customer centric is a puzzle that takes different pieces. And a big bang isn't going to work, because it really is. You need to look at what I call a strong shared sense of purpose. So, is, and it doesn't need to be a catchy one-liner. It's just, what is the feeling that you want to give customers? How do you want them to talk about you, about their interactions with you? What is the thing that your employees themselves say, wow, if we achieved, that's something that we're really proud of. One of the companies that I worked at, you know, their service reputation was horrible. They were in the press all the time. Shareholders received complaint letters from customers all across Europe. And there was a brand platform, fine, but I said, okay, let's just go one layer deeper. What are the things that you would be proud of? What is, in an ideal world, the way you would want to serve the customers? And the frontline themselves came with, we want to be an inspiring guide for our customers in the digital world. Now, they were not even trustworthy as a simple customer service rep, let alone could they become perceived by the customer as, or credible to be an inspiring guide. But they put that ambition there. And then it turned the situation around, because now I could say to them, okay, awesome. Just tell me what you need me to do. What help do you need from me to actually make that ambition come true? And then, of course, you do get to look at the brilliant basics. You know, what are the basics that need to be fixed? And there was a lot, actually, because around 50% of our customer interactions were caused by things breaking down or processes breaking down. And then one of the other aspects is care. I love Colleen Barrett from Southwest. You know, she always said, I spent 80% of my time taking care of our employees in a way that we would like them to be able to spend 100% of their time taking care of our customers. And they really lived up to that. And she said, and that will also make our shareholders happy, but in that order. So it's also, do you take care of your people before you ask them to care about your customers? And then there's something like consistency. Do you walk the talk? You know, is it, and are you consistent? So, you know, what you are on the inside, is that consistent with your communication outside, whether it's marketing messages or PR or whatever? And then, is that consistent with the storytelling you would like to hear when a customer talks about experiences with your company, or employees talking about your company? And then the last thing is, you have to get your ducks in a row with respect to value. You will not believe, but most companies that I enter into, there is no customer centricity governance framework. And how often people say to me, yeah, but you can't really measure the value of customer experience. Well, are you kidding me? You can. And the interesting thing is that you actually can do it even with using a lot of the KPIs that you traditionally already have. But it's, first of all, linking KPIs across silos, and then much more and much better looking at the trends. So, what are the trends that we see, and starting to learn, because it really is a learning process. If you are turning the right dials in your organization, because there is cause and effect in your KPIs. The easiest one is your employee engagement. When your employee engagement goes down, guess what happens to your customer satisfaction and your customer engagement? It goes down. And things like your customer engagement and whether you measure NPS or Net Promoter Score or customer relationship score, whatever you measure, you will always see how that impacts your share of wallet, your customer lifetime value, your profit margins, what happens to your customer acquisition costs. And one of the things in there that's really interesting is that there are a few companies who really, I'm not a financial person, I'm a scientist in music, but I actually have come to learn about co activity-based costing. And it's when I say that, a finance department goes, "Oh, yes, we'd love to have it, but we don't." I said, I want you to actually give me the real, fully loaded cost to serve. Because, for instance, in an organization where it was a subscription business, but the business was set up over the years in a way that the whole market knew when you take a subscription, the first thing you do is you cancel it again. Why? Because, and then you wait until your subscription has really expired. They will start bombarding you, but you don't say yes until after your subscriptions expire. Because then they will give you the best offer. So none of the customers was paying the real list price. They all had discounts. So that does, it's your customer acquisition cost, your profit margins go down. But guess what it does to your operational cost? When you lose 50% of your customer base every year, the operational cost of that are humongous. And then even then, we got one of the first things I said is, okay, let's just get RPA in there because it's really stupid tasks. We don't need valuable customer service reps to do this. That's just dealing with the effect, not addressing the cause. And once they were able to turn that around, yeah. So it customer centricity really touches upon, that's also what I like about it. It gives me a great excuse to get involved in everything.
It's very true, isn't it? You make some very good points there around it's the what happens on the inside is going to be a reflection on the outside. And that's not just the frontline staff, that's all the way back to those who maybe 2 or 3 degrees of separation, but are still in service of someone who's still in service of the customer. And it chimes with me that the notion of working from an operational perspective. So therefore, starting point is how can we do what we do better, rather than a marketing perspective, which is how do we commercialize this asset?
Exactly.
It's a very different, it's a very different starting point. And I think, perhaps sometimes practitioners and six don't appreciate that perspective they have has a huge bias on what they see needs to be improved from an operational perspective and a marketing perspective. And they might tolerate some real basics that are not acceptable because actually it's a case of let's just get more customers in, let's get more customers in on that basis. It's fascinating. I think it was very clear, Nicola. And I guess if people do want to get hold of you, I know you have a book out, but I'm sure there must be another edition coming soon, surely. You've had a bit of time since the last one. Are you thinking about capturing your new knowledge or your learned knowledge? Are you thinking about bringing another publication out?
Yeah, actually, I thought, okay, a book 2022. Well, let's do it differently. I developed an online training, which is it's about actually the big five of what I call the big five of customer centricity. So it's the heart that I already described from five puzzle pieces. So the strong shared sense of purpose, the brilliant basics, care, consistency, and value. It really is a book that gives people or an online training that gives people a lot of ideas. And there are some templates and formats, but it's really inspiring you to think
Great.
differently about how can I take my organization on this journey from talking about customer centricity and putting the customer at the heart of everything we all do to really being it and doing it without needing me.
Sure.
Yeah. And there's
That's
another
fabulous.
book coming as well, and that's
Oh,
called
wonderful.
the Realistic Customer Centricity Method.
Okay, sounds good.
I've been busy.
If people want to get hold of you, LinkedIn is a good place to get hold of you.
Yeah,
Yeah,
absolutely.
wonderful.
There's only one
And
Nicolette of LinkedIn.
in terms of, I mean, our mutual connection here is the ECXO. And as I say, you're in an ambassador's role. What do you see as the important factors bringing together a community based on geographical kind of differences? What are you looking to get out of the ECXO and why are you involved?
I think that having worked in continental Europe for my whole career, and very often for Americans, I can give you the war stories of Americans coming in and saying, "Yeah, Europe," and they think it's just like the States, one market, one language, one culture, and just go ahead and do your thing well. And yeah, in the times that I had pan-European roles and usually corporate, I always began with wine or dine or shover in a plane. That's how corporate was looked at. So it took me a while to build up trust with people. There's a lot you can benefit from across the footprint, whether it's what technology you use, buying equipment and buying technology has its pros to do that as a group. But at the end of the day, this human connection, there I go again, is very different per country. Every country has a different culture, a different language, different levels of maturity with respect to digitalization. So I think that very much of the like CXP and things like that, there are a lot of initiatives that are Anglo-Saxon, so from the States or from the UK. And I really think that the continent, there's a lot that we can learn from each other, really dealing with these different countries and cultures and languages and levels of maturity in our different foot in the different countries in our footprint. And that's also why I decided to become an ambassador of ECXO, because it really is important that we find each other. And though we're very inspired, me too, very often by the Anglo-Saxon examples, but there's also a lot of value in sharing the differences in the footprint itself.
No, excellent. I couldn't concur more. I think it's so important to be able to give confidence with some local context. And expectations do change between sectors and as much as they
Yeah,
do geographies. Yeah? So you've only got to look at
absolutely.
some of the KPI measurements for customer experience by country. Just culturally, we judge more harshly or more favorably on the same measures. So like yourself, I'm very much learn and develop a lot more with my interaction across countries in Europe than I'm doing so, perhaps with a more conventional, as you say, kind of Anglo-Saxon approach. So that's wonderful. But Nicolette, it's been absolutely fascinating catching up with you. And I'd like to say you're a kindred spirit. It's been lovely to hear your wisdom and your frameworks and your depth of understanding from the many engagements you've had. And I'm sure many more organizations are going to benefit from that learning. So thank you so much. Good luck in your
Thank
new
you.
role as the ambassador. Good luck with the new publications, and I hope to catch up with you again soon.
Yes, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it. Thank you, Christopher.